The last time at the reductive group, of a Q, and we had a conjugacy class of homomorphisms from C cross to GR satisfying conditions SV1, SV2, SV3. And then we defined the Chamorro variety to be the family of things. Parameterized by the compact open subgroups of GAF. And this was GQ. But tomorrow I'm going to give lots of examples of these things, and we'll see another description of the points. Today I want to analyze this as a topological space. So I won't actually use the axioms very much. You can, for most of what I'm saying, we can simply think of this as a reductive group, a conjugacy class of homomorphisms, and you can just regard X as a topological space as being GR modulo the centralizer of one of the H's. So this is certainly a topological space. It doesn't matter how you topologize this because this is open, so you can give it the discrete topology or the adelic topology. So by analyzing, I mean we should get a nice description of the connected components and then a nice description of the set of connected components and a nice description of each connected component. And you can do this in general, but it's easier if you assume that G's derived is simply connected, which is what I will do. So I should say, yeah, there'll be more notes as soon as I figure out how to get my computer connected to the wireless network again. And last week it was working beautifully. It was easy to put them on my own homepage rather than on the field's homepage. So later this afternoon, or sometime this afternoon, I'll get sections 5 and 6 on here. So let me write down some exact sequences associated with reductive groups. So if you have a reductive group, then we have this exact sequence. This is the center of the group, and this is the associated adjoint group. And then we have the drive group, which is the semi-simple part of the group. And we define T to be the quotient, so T is a torus. And then you can write down some more. The center maps to this toral quotient. And it maps onto, obviously. And the kernel is this, which is the intersection of the center, which is actually the center of the derived group. So we always have these exact sequences. And just to just write them down in the case of GL2. So on GL2, you have GM into GL2. Into PGL2. And here we have 1 into SL2. This is an example to keep in mind when you're thinking of these things. And then the quotient is just GM again. And then this sequence down here is 1 into mu 2, the group with two elements, into GM, into GM. 1, this is multiplication by 2. So here the GM is sitting in as the diagonal matrices, and here the GM, this is the determinant map here. So if you go look at the diagonal matrices and you take the determinant, the composite is a square. Okay, so you always have this picture, and this is what it looks like in this case. So this is handy to keep in mind. Now the first thing I want to do is Well, maybe I should remind you. So, we have a map from here to Jiyad R, and the plus connected component of this we write with a plus, and then the things in here which map into the connected component we write with a lower plus. Okay. And then GQ with a lower plus is equal to GR, GQ intersect GR with a lower plus. So they look back up here, GL2Q with the lower plus is just the 2x2 matrices with positive determinant. Now if we choose a connected component, so in general this is a finite union of connected components, so we choose an X plus, so connected, and I claim that this double coset can be rewritten as GQ lower plus X upper plus cross GAF over K. So obviously there's a map from here to here, and obviously I have to put a plus down here because in general when GR acts on this, it will move the components around. For example, GL2R moves the upper half plane to the lower half plane. If you take a matrix with, take the usual action of make GL2R act on the upper half, well, act by sending A this, then if the determinant is positive, it's it preserves the upper half plane. If the determinant is negative, it takes the upper half plane to the lower half plane. So I claim that these two are equal. More precisely, I mean, of course, there's a canonical map from here to here. I claim that this is an isomorphism, one-to-one. And for that, we need two facts. The first one is just a general fact about connected groups over the real numbers, and it's called the real approximation theorem. Yes. Throughout this talk, we're going to be using various facts about the arithmetic or of algebraic groups over number fields, so I'll just have to state them all, and in the notes there'll be references. So we need the real approximation theorem. That says that if G of R is just any connected group, it's got nothing to do with reductive groups. Oh, G over Q, I should say. It's GQ is dense in GR. It's a general fact. Now, if we accept that, then what it means in particular, GQ will map onto the set of connected components of GR. So it means that everything here, when we act on this by GQ, something in GQ will move you from one component to another component if you take it close enough to the real thing that does that. GR acts transitively on these components, obviously by definition, and because GQ is dense, it will also act transitively on the set of connected components of this. So this real approximation theorem tells us that everything, if you look at this just in the orbit of GQ acting on this, everything is represented by something in one particular connected component. So one implies this is onto. The other thing we need, which is the two places that we really need the axioms, and that is that I claim that the stabilizer in GR of X plus is, in fact, GR lower plus. So this is just the fact I was saying that you can just check directly if you want that the stabilizer of the upper half plane when you let GL2R, when you let GL2R act on the complex numbers, the stabilizer of the upper half plane is the set of matrices with positive determinant. If you have negative determinants, you take the upper half plane and down to the lower half plane. So the stabilizer of the upper half plane in GL2R is just GL2R plus. And I claim that that's true in general, and this is follows from here. We have to use something about emission symmetric domains, follows from directly from the fact that when you let GAD R act on X and the stabilizer of, well, the action of GR factors stabilizer of the kinetic component is G add R plus. What I really mean is that when we have GR at plus acting on X plus, and the action doesn't extend to anything bigger. So you have a, think of these things as a conjugacy class of maps into G add R, and the stabilizer of a kinetic component is just the identity component here. This is really a statement about emission symmetric domains. And this one, of course, implies this one exactly, because this is acting through this. And then this one here implies that the map is injective directly. Because if you have two things here, in here, which become conjugate by something in here, and the thing that conjugates them takes one to the, so if they're both in the plus part, if something here takes one to the other, then it must stabilize the plus part, so it must actually lie in here. So this is actually a convenient way of thinking of this double cosets place. It gets rid of the extra components here. Yeah?
I don't see why one implies
surjectivity.
I mean,
why does one imply surjectivity? Well, GR certainly acts transitively on X. GR acts transitively on X, on the whole of X, in fact. And GR plus is certainly stabilizing X plus. So I just have to show that modulo this, everything's hit by something from here, but this is open in here. This is open in here. Okay?
I don't see why you let you know, because the action is diagonal. The action of
G. No, I mean, this is a homogeneous space for GR. I think it's a homogeneous space for GR. This certainly stabilizes each component. So this is a set of kinetic components of this is a homogeneous space for this over this. And this is open in here, and this is dense in here, and I think it's okay. So now, in the third sequence up there, we've run into this situation a lot. If you have a surjective map of groups, so when we look at the real points, the map on the real points need not be surjective. So I define, this is a dagger, not a plus. I define TR dagger to be the image of the map. So this maps onto this contained inside TR. And I've mentioned it at least once and that is that in general, in the situation when you have a surjective map of algebraic groups, this map is not surjective, but it is surjective under the identity component of this. So this contains PR plus a connected component. I try to distinguish them. Thank you. Huh? This is a dagger. Okay. And this is a plus. So, for torus, this over, well, for any group, in fact, there are only a finite number of connected components. So, this is a finite index in here. And rather frequently, this will actually equal this, so maybe it doesn't matter too much if I confuse the dagger with the plus. But so in this example here, this is, in the example, this is the positive real numbers. GMR is just across the non-negative real numbers, and the dagger in this case is the things which are real numbers which are squares, which are obviously just all the positive real numbers. So in this case, the plus is equal to the dagger. Okay. So I have this subgroup of finite index in here. Now I can state the theorem. So the thing we're interested in is the plus. X plus. So we have a map from here to. So I didn't define the TQ dagger. You can probably guess what the TQ dagger is. It's TQ intersect the TR dagger. Okay. So in this case, the this in that case is just the positive rational numbers. So you have a map from here to here, I claim. Yeah, let me give this map up here a name. Call that map mu. So in that case, it's the determinant map. So this is defined by mu. So we have a map like this, and then I claim that this is a finite set, and it has a discrete topology. What I really mean is that this is actually open in here, which is not completely obvious. And then I claim this map here is continuous. This is just the obvious map where you forget this component and apply mu to get down here. So this is continuous. It's onto, and the fibers are connected. And in fact, one can say what the fibers are. So if I look at the class of 1 in here, then the fiber over here will be x plus modulo gamma, where gamma is a congruent subgroup. Of G derived Q. And gamma will contain the thing you would, so this, it will contain K intersect G derived Jew. Yeah, this is a compact, this is a congruent subgroup. One of the definitions of a congruent subgroup was that it was intersection of this with a compact open subgroup. And so this may not, well, plus. No, because, I'm assuming that G is simply, G derived simply connected. Yeah, thank you. Otherwise, there's a statement like this, but it's more complicated. I don't want to think about it. Then you can find it in Dalin's Corvallis article. If you assume simply connected, it just becomes much simpler. So, yeah, I'm assuming that G derived is simply connected, so. Right. And I should say that often this, in fact, is actually equal. Namely, it's certainly true if G has no factors of type A. So I claim that actually this is equal if no factors of type A. And maybe always, I'm not quite sure. So in case that G derived is simply connected, this tells, so another way of looking at this is that, you see, this is a finite discrete space, and this is a continuous map that's onto, and the fibers are all connected. So another way of seeing this is that this map here is identifying pi zero of this with this. Okay. The set of pi zero, the set of connected components of this gets identified with this. Excuse me?
Effect about the fiber, this is something which one can easily. I know that it's
easy. What?
Effect of the fiber, this stuff over gamma, which over gamma is this thing. This thing is also the thing.
Which one?
The fiber.
Oh?
The fiber is what you.
Oh. I'm going to prove this. This is a theorem. That's what I'm going to do today, is prove none of this is. Well, if it's obvious, then I can go on. So this is a theorem. None of that should be obvious. So, I really want to prove this. So, however, as I said, also, in order to prove it, I need to use some facts about simply connected groups. So I'll make a list of them over here. And two of them I've already stated, and they're references in the notes, and the notes will be on the web one day. So the first one is that, let me just say that H simply connected. Well, let me just say, H be a simply connected group. And the first thing we need is that H, R is connected. And all these four things are definitely false for non-simply connected groups. For example, PGL2R is not connected. The second thing we need, yes, a strong approximation. So that implies that G derived Q is dense in G derived AF. So remember that for strong approximation to hold, we have to have that the group is simply connected. We also have to have that it has no factors over Q, which are compact over R. And why does that hold for G derived? Well, that was the condition SV3. I mean, SV3 was, I stated in terms of the adjoint group, but the derived group just a finite covering of the adjoint group. So another way of rephrasing SV3 is that it's precisely put in there so that this is true. Okay. Now we need something. Well, this is fairly serious, I think. Something more serious. We need cohomology. The Hassel principle. It's a bad notation, but QL for L equal to infinity is the real numbers. So this is injective. So, is everyone happy? I mean, this is Galois cohomology, non-abelian Galois cohomology. So it's continuous cross homomorphisms from the Galois group into H Q bar modulo principal cross homomorphisms. So this is injective. This is the Hassel principle for simply connected algebraic groups. That is a fairly hard theorem. The hard part, actually, there was one case for many years there that was proved except for groups of type E8, and then the E8 was also proved, and we don't need E8, so maybe it's not quite so hard. E8 doesn't occur in Chamorro varieties. If you've read the tables, you'll know why. If you read my notes, you'll know why. But this is the Hassel principle. But now, all these things, I think all these statements are in the book by Patanoff and Rapunchuk, and which is a fairly easy book to read, actually. So it's not that they're certainly accessible. Given enough time, you can all go off and read Patanoff and Rapunchuk and see that these things are true. The last thing I need is that, that H1 QL H equal to 0 for L not equal to infinity. So in other words, all these groups here are 0 except for the real one, which is usually not zero. So if you combine these two, it says that this injects into this with just the real numbers in here. Okay. So I need those statements. So I put them up here. Oh, yeah, I mean, I should say that these things are sets with a distinguished element. So, as you say, I should say this is a... they're not groups, because this is non-commutative, so... you have to be a bit more careful defining these things. You take cross-homomorphisms, and then they don't form a group, but you can... get the principal cross homomorphisms acting on them in a certain way. So this is a set with a distinguished element. Namely, the distinguished element just consists of all the principal cross homomorphisms. So as you pointed out, you have to be a little one should be a little careful about working with those things, because they're not groups. Nevertheless, it certainly makes sense to say the map is injective. Okay, so the point is to prove this statement here. So first lemma I need. So GR plus is a set of things in here which wind up in here. So what's obviously in here? Well, obviously anything in ZR is in here, because it's in the kernel even. And also, anything in G-derived R is in here, because this certainly contains the identity component of GR. So we see that obviously GR plus contains G-derived R because this is connected, and it obviously contains ZR. So that's obvious. So what I claim is that equality holds. In other words, there's nothing non-obvious in here. So for the proof, we write down a little diagram. So now, if we forget the points, if we have a map from Z to G, and a map from G derived to G, just as maps of algebraic groups. And the kernel of that map from this across this is the intersection of this with this, which is the Z prime over there, this little finite thing. So the co-kernel here is the H1. R Z prime. Okay. That's what these groups do. They measure the non-surjectivity of maps like that. The failure of the sequence to be exact. Okay. So now I write down Z prime R. So now I want to write down, I didn't write it up here. Maybe I fit it in here. You get this one as a map across here, which is onto, and the kernel is again the things in here and in here, which is Z prime. So we have G derived R, G add R. The co-kernel is the same. Yeah. G prime. Nice. No, I'm really worried. Because I want to write down a map here, but hey, no, I'm really worried. So there's a mistake, unfortunately, in my notes, but I think this is correct. But my argument was that if we have something here, so I'm worried about the existing a map like this, and I'm sort of worried about this altogether right now. Okay, but let's just continue anyway. So if you had a diagram like this, then in order for, if you have something in here, perhaps we can fix it, but I hope we can fix it. So if you have something in here which maps into the connected component here, that's the same as saying, well, if you have something here which maps into the connected component here, it lifts to here. Because this maps onto the commit identity component. So if we have something here which is in the plus, what it means in being in the plus means that it lies in here. The plus down here means it lies in here, so it lifts to here. So that means its commodity class in here is trivial. Therefore, its commodity class in here is trivial. Therefore, it lifts to here. But I'm just worried about this commutative diagram. Okay. So I hope I can fix that. Yeah. Project on the second factor. So you project on the second factor. Now this one. No, that's correct. Yeah, I think it's okay. No, yeah, if you just map this in diagonally, project on the second factor. T goes to T inverse T, okay. Then project on the second factor. It's okay, good. No, I'm projecting. Yeah, it's okay. Good. Okay. No more blackboards. Yes, so that's okay. Well, everyone will have to remember the definition of TQ dagger. You all wrote it down, I hope. So. So, the next lemma. So, ZR, remember, maps onto TR dagger. That's the definition of that. So, maybe I can. There, so lemma. So suppose that T belongs to TQ. I claim that T belongs to TQ dagger if and only if T belongs to the image of GQ plus to TQ. So the key thing here is the following diagram. This thing in the raise this quickly before anybody finds a mistake. I want to put the proof over here. I want to leave everything else up on the blackboard. So I want to do a diagram. So the key thing here is another diagram. So I think I want to write down the cohomology sequence of the second one up there. Yeah. So it's the second sequence up there. So we have this. Okay, that's the cohomology sequence of the second one. So again, this is this is the group in this case. Ah, should be G derived, excuse me. It's not a group. So has a distinguished element, and something here maps to the distinguished element if and only if it lifts to here. And the definition of these cohomology groups is very, very simple, and the fact that the sequence is exact in this sense is obvious. Now we want to put down here the same thing except with R. Now I want to use the fact that this is injective. So we're using these two facts up here. Now, the proof of the diagram chase. So let's prove it this way first. So if I take T and TQ dagger, then we have to see that it. So if T is in TQ dagger, then it lifts to this with a plus down here. So I'll draw a diagram. So I'll just chase this diagram. So we start off with a T down here, and we map it down to, let's write a T subscript R down here. Now the hypothesis is that once you map it into here, it lifts to something in ZR. The hypothesis. Now, so in particular, we see that the image of this in here lifts to here. So that means that the image of TR in here is the distinguished element, the neutral element. So that means the image of T in here is the neutral element. So that tells us that T in here lifts to here. Okay, so there exists an A here, which maps to T. Now I only have to prove, that's a good start, I only have to prove now that it actually lies in GQ with a lower plus down here. Well, so I mapped A down here to an AR, so we see that AR maps to this and Z maps to this. So we see that if I look at AR T Z inverse, that maps to 1 in here. Therefore, it belongs to G derived R. I should put G derived. So this means that AR belongs to G derived R times ZR, which is contained inside GR plus. And that's the condition for A to belong to GQ lower plus. Okay. And I'll try and do the other diagram chase up here. So let's do it the other way around. So again, I start off with T here. And the hypothesis is this time that it's the image of something in GQ plus. That's the hypothesis. So now we go down to TR here, and we go down to AR here. And now we use the first lemma. AR, by hypothesis, this is in this with the lower plus. So that means that this is in this with the lower plus. But according to the lemma, which I erased, sitting right here, this is, means it's actually equal to something in Z times something in the derived group. So this is in Z derived. And this is in the center. Okay, that's the previous lemma. This is in GR with a lower plus, and therefore it must be something in ZR times something in the derived group. And now, of course, the thing in the derived group maps to 1 here, and therefore Z must map to Z itself. A maps to T, B maps to 1, therefore Z maps to T. Okay? Now, shouldn't erase that, but everybody remembered. So now I can replace this by new GQ plus. Okay. Because I just erased. So the key thing in this argument is to prove that the fibers are connected. I guess it's obvious this is continuous. It's not quite obvious it's onto us. Nothing is quite obvious, but the key thing is that the fibers are in fact connected. So suppose that we have, I can erase that. I've used it over here. So suppose I have an X, G, and suppose it maps to, let's first of all look at the element, at the sort of the, this particular element down here. See that the fiber over 1 is connected. So what does that mean? It means that when I apply mu to G, it's equal to, in here it's the class of 1, so it's just something, so it's equal to mu Q times 1 times mu K, where this belongs to GQ plus and this belongs to K. So if I have any class up here that maps to this, then G, mu G can be written in this fashion. So that tells me that mu of Q inverse G K inverse is equal to 1, actually. It's not just goes to the class of 1, but it's actually equal to 1. So that means, well, of course, remember how these things act. I could take the Q over here. So this tells us that this thing here is in G derived AF. Okay. It's the kernel of mu. Now, this tells us that this class and this double coset space is actually represented by X and something in G-derived AF, okay? Because I could just act on this by Q and K, Q inverse and K inverse, and I would get Q inverse G and K, Q inverse X, and I would get this element in here, which is in here. And that's the same element. Same element in the double coset space. So it tells us that everything in the fiber is represented by something here and something in G derived AF. And now G derived AF, because of the strong approximation theorem, is equal to GQ, G derived Q, times K G derived AF. This is open in here, and this is open in here, and this is dense in here, therefore it's equal to that. So in other words, it can be written as something in here times something in here. So that tells us, again, by using the same argument, that this represented, if something's in the fiber over here, it's actually represented by something with a 1 in the second place. Okay, it's represented by something with QK here, but then that's in the same orbit as this one here. We say that's actually equal to Q. Yeah, this is equal to that. So this is represented by this, and which has a 1 in the second place. So that, you're shaking your head in disbelief or amazement. So that means that if you look at the fiber over 1 here, It's a quotient of X plus. And X plus is connected, that tells you that the fiber is connected. Okay. So that's the essential part. And if you look a little harder, then you see if you call this thing gamma prime, then if you look at the fiber of call this pi maybe. Then we at least get a map. So we get a map. The fiber over 1, we get a map for x plus to it. So it's connected. That's the key point. And in fact, it factors through through gamma prime here. And this would be a finite map. So you have these two curves. Not curves, I mean these two varieties which have the same universal covering space, X plus, and this is finite, so this will be the quotient of this by something just a little bit bigger. So it'll be a congruent subgroup of G derived Q containing this as a subgroup of finite index. So that's the key part. So let's if you take a different, well, so what's left to be done? Let me just state the two things. First thing is, you need two things. One is that GAF to TAF is surjective and open. And the second thing is that TQ or TAF is compact. Compact, yeah. Now, if we just accept those two things for the moment, I claim that completes the proof. So this is continuous and it's, well, we want to prove it's onto, well, now it's clearly onto, right? we have this, it's clearly onto. So now we want to prove that because this maps onto here, and we want to prove that the fiber of any other point is connected, well, it's more or less the same game, except that instead of getting it containing this, well, what you do is you take a T here, and you lift it to an A in here. Then I think you get exactly the same thing, except that you get an A conjugate of K in here. Okay. So, of course, I want to know that the fibers are connected and non-empty, maybe. Empty space connected, I don't remember. And if this is surjective and open, that means that this is an open subgroup of this. And if the quotient of this by PQ is compact, this would be dividing out something by something which is open by, well, the quotient is, if this is compact and you divide out by something open, you get something finite. And remember, this is a finite index in here. So, yeah, so that will complete the whole proof. That proves those two things. This, well, we have a good start. This follows from D. I mean, the co-kernel of this is measured by H1 of the derived group over QL, and I said that was zero. So this is onto. That's a good start. You might think, well, if all these maps are onto, this map here is onto. But that's not true. But two of these things are slightly tricky. I mean, what you've got to prove is that this is onto for almost all L. And this is true by an argument, and it's sort of a Hensel's lemma type thing. It's an argument in algebraic geometry, which is in the notes, at least a little bit of this. This one here uses finiteness of a class number. It's quite easy, a field. So rather than saying more about that, I'll spend the last 2 or 3 minutes saying a little bit more about how you can reinterpret this theorem, how you should reinterpret this theorem. So this is TQ dagger. Now, I didn't say so, but when we're defining a Shimura variety, we could take the reductor group G to be a torus. So the torus is a commutative, so conjugacy class just consists of one map. And so if I take a torus and I take a map, this defines me a Shimura variety, because if you look at the conditions S1, SB1, SB2, and SB3, they look completely vacuous in this case. They all talk about, well, you go check. The conditions are vacuous. So this, given this and a homomorphism like this, we get a Shimura variety. And its bits are just, well, this is a one-point set. Okay. That's not very exciting. I claim that one should. There are good reasons for generalizing this a little bit, and starting with the torus T, never mind the H, which doesn't have much to do with anything. Take Y to be any set on which TR acts transitively. Now TR modulo TR plus acts transitively. Then one should define a zero-dimensional Shamor variety, which is not strictly speaking a Shamor variety, just to be a finite set on which TR acts. So it's just a little, so say about having one element here, we have a finite set. Okay, so we get, so this is a zero-dimensional, I'll call this a zero-dimensional Shamor variety. And now the thing is, if you look, go back and look at this, and we take if I take y to be equal to t r over t r dagger, which is actually the same by the real approximation theorem, this over tq dagger, then you see that this is equal to tq over y cross TAF over nu k, where this in fact is a compact open in here. There's a map from here to here, and yeah, these two are trivially the same. So you see that what we have here is a zero-dimensional Shamor variety in the sense over here. I've just slightly extended the definition. So the right way to think of this is that if you take a Shamor variety, at least with derived groups simply connected, then the set of connected components is a zero-dimensional Shamor variety in the sense here. And the set of connected components is a zero-dimensional Shamor variety, and each connected component is a connected Shamor variety. Yeah, that's the right way to think of a Shamor variety. Tomorrow we'll look at lots and lots of examples of Shamor varieties.